Welcome to XX Science, it's in your genes. Today is Friday, April 19th, 2013. I am Adrian Rorick, chemistry editor, and with me today is Jeff Perkel, tech editor at XX Science. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Adrian.
So this week, I'm wondering, what have you been reading lately?
So I've just started rereading a book that I had read a couple of years ago for an article that I was working on called The Book of Vice by Peter Sagal, host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Basically, it has one chapter on each of the seven sins, and it's pretty funny. I was reading particularly the chapter on gluttony where he describes this 26-course dinner that he and his wife sat down to, and essentially at the end of it, he's like, I just really wanted a cheeseburger. It's a very funny book.
Well, he's a really funny guy, and I enjoy a lot of his work with NPR and also reading other things.
Yeah, no, he's hilarious. This book is very, very clever. What are you reading?
Well, it's kind of funny you mentioned Peter Sagal. He writes a regular column in Runner's World, and to be honest, I have been reading the last couple months of issues of Runner's World because I hadn't been reading them. And the funny thing about reading Runner's World, while I'm a runner, is it's always interesting to me to see how much they put in there that's real science and how much they put in that's pseudoscience. So it's kind of one of those magazines that you have to be careful with. Now on to our week of posts. This week we had four posts. Co-host today, tech editor Jeffrey Perkel, had two posts early in the week. The first appeared on April 14th called La Vie Estelle Ne Sait Pas. This post actually goes back to a news piece that Jeff covered on the March 22nd podcast, wherein we're looking at the beauty of life under a microscope. So, Jeff, tell me, why did you decide to take this from being just a news article you covered on XX Science Podcast to being a blog post on XX Science Magazine blog?
Well, basically it comes down to I just really, really like microscopy. I mean, I just think microscopy is just one of those techniques that's really underappreciated in terms of it's not underappreciated. Everyone knows it's important, but you know it's important, but sometimes you forget that what people are showing can be incredibly beautiful. I had been looking into some of these new microscopy techniques that had been coming out and was just blown away by the images. I just thought that our readers at XX Science would be very interested in them, perhaps from the science that they tell, but also just from the, isn't it incredible that we are able to see these things? And so I decided to write a post that showed some of the results of these things just from the point of view of the images. And as long as I was doing it, I would also talk about some photomicroscopy contests where the goal is actually to simply create a beautiful image. And they're really quite something.
This is a source of beauty and with a science bent. So this is a great place where art and science meet. And for those who really enjoy that, this is a great post to check out. Jeff's second post of the week posted April 16th, and it was called Circumcision Shuffles the Penis Ecosystem, wherein Jeff takes on another microbiome, the third one I think he's covered for XX Science, that of the penis. Could you tell me about the study that sparked this post, Jeff?
First, you're correct. This is the third one. So first I wrote about the vaginal ecosystem. Then I ended up writing about a paper on the oral microbiome. This paper is about the penis microbiome and specifically how the microbial content of the penis, which is really kind of gross to think about, but how it changes after circumcision. The background here is that there was this clinical trial in Uganda looking at whether or not prospective circumcision of adult males would reduce the risk of transmission of HIV. And in the context of this trial, at least, it did. But as a part of that trial, they collected swabs of the penis, both before and after. And basically, they just compared the microbial content of those swabs in both the people who were circumcised and the people who weren't. And what they found is that after circumcision, the absolute amount of bacteria changes and, unsurprisingly, the nature of the bacteria change. Basically, there are fewer so-called anaerobes, that is, microbes who grow in the absence of oxygen, and more microbes who grow in the presence of oxygen. And they also notice a change, some reduction in the number of bacteria that are associated, among other things, with infections in women. This is kind of a survey study. You can't draw conclusions about medical treatment from something like this, but it was an interesting study.
You treat the post with your usual sense of humor and with a lot of the anatomy explained, which is helpful because I certainly didn't know the word, the anatomy, and what it exactly referred to with the Latin words. And I find your tip on Google searching particularly funny. Definitely NSFW.
Yeah, Emily, our editor, was kind enough to tell me what coronal sulcus means, but I find it amazing that it wasn't in Grey's Anatomy, because I was kind of kicking myself after the fact that I should have written into this post that I don't believe they've invented a new part of the penis since Grey's Anatomy was written 100 years ago, but for whatever reason, the term wasn't in there, so then I had to go to Google, and that was a bit of a mistake.
All right.
On April 18th, our health editor, Tara Haley, covered apparent human papillomavirus vaccine concerns persist, and she's talking about the fact that a couple of studies have come out showing that the vaccine is incredibly safe and apparently incredibly effective, yet parents willing to get this vaccine for their children remains a relatively low number.
Well, and I would put in that it seems to be that there was some media controversy at one point. It's a forced controversy that, like any vaccine controversy, that probably keeps parents from vaccinating their children with this HPV vaccines.
So the point here is that Tara shows that the vaccine is very, very safe. There are no serious side effects to the vaccine, she reports. I think there have been 46 million girls, she says, who have received it so far, and basically they suffer only minor side effects, the typical side effects one gets from a vaccination, basically. Also that there were some reduction in the number of women showing genital warts among those who have received the vaccine.
Okay.
So it's clearly effective. And yet, as you said, because of a kind of false controversy, a lot of people are choosing not to use it.
Yep. Well, so get the facts, read this post, and if you have a daughter a young daughter, which you will be making this decision at some point, or a daughter in this age range, definitely worth the extra consideration.
Absolutely. On April 17th, Jeannie Garbarino, our biology editor, gave us an opinion on balancing work and home life, and the overview is, first move is ours, ditch the guilt weighing you down. And basically, Jeannie takes a moment to reflect about the Boston Marathon bombings to talk about essentially how nobody ever says on their deathbed, I wish I had worked more.
Right. And yet there's a dichotomy where, especially for women, they're expected to be home and nurture their children. So that plays into that, I wish I didn't work more. At the same time, if you're a breadwinner, if you've worked very hard for your career, the career expectations, especially in science, are that you work huge hours a week and just are super dedicated and sacrifice your family. So her opinion piece, I think, really is very well laid out in that there is a problem that is recognized, that you have this dichotomy that it affects women more than it does men, but it does affect men too, because men should also be able to work as they choose and also care for their family and have a work-life balance that is actually balanced. It affects both men and women, but it is slightly worse for women because of the cultural expectation that they have child duties. And then it is a problem that's been, it's a problem that's been recognized, and there's countless talks about it. And then she wraps up, because there, of course, has been no resolution, but she wraps up with what she will think about going forward.
Absolutely.
You can find all those posts at our website, xxscience.org, by clicking on the links to the post title on the main page. In addition to our xxscience site postings, our sister site, xxscience Jr., had two posts this week. Tuesday, we had a post from Future Science Leaders blogger Megan N. on the SciStew chat concerning cloning. And Jeannie Garbarino, our biology editor, covered an overview of the SciOteen conference that occurred on Saturday, April 13th, for our Thursday post. Now, normally we have students who write for students, but concerning the SIOTeen conference, since that was aimed at students, and Jeannie had attended partly in presentation, that's why she wrote for us at this time. One of the topics covered at SIOTeen was blogging, and I definitely encourage anybody in the ages 8 to 16 age range who's interested in trying their hand at science blogging to contact us at XXScienceJr, and you can just email XXScienceJr@gmail.com if you're interested in doing that for more information.
Obviously, so one way that people can participate in the blogging or get involved in blogging is to participate in these Twitter SciStu chats. And that's what Megan N. did, where she wrote a post on April 16th about cloning. She talked about the conversation that occurred on Twitter about therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning and kind of the pros and the cons and obviously some of the ethical questions about there. It's an interesting post, and it's really fantastic that Megan is an 18-year-old. It's a really good post from a up-and-coming blogger.
Yeah. And you can find these posts at XXScienceJr.blogspot.com or by following the link from the XXScience.org main page. If you're at the XXScienceJr website, you can always search for them as well. Now on to our news. Jeff, what science news have you been reading this week?
So there was a really interesting story in Nature published this week on the sequencing of the coelacanth genome. And the coelacanth, if people remember, is this so-called living fossil that had been thought to be extinct for 70 million years until one was pulled up by fishermen in 1938. It's called a living fossil, both because it was thought to have gone extinct, but also because it kind of looks like a fossil. And basically, researchers finally were able to extract some viable tissue from one and sequence the genome. And basically, there's a lot of work in the paper about what we know about the genome of the DNA of this organism. But because of how old it is and its particular place in the evolutionary tree, researchers were interested in what the coelacanth could tell us about the evolution of creatures that walk on land, basically. There are some very interesting observations made here about the rate at which the genome of this organism has changed over time. It seems to be much slower than other organisms, which is possibly due to where it lives and its relative lack of predators. And also, they solidify that the coelacanth is not the closest living relative we have to the fish that first walked on land. That is actually, apparently, something called a lungfish. And you can read about it at Nature, NPR, Wired. A lot of places picked up this story. And Adrian, you were reading about something in Chemical and Engineering News.
Yep, that's my favorite go-to place for science news. Now, this isn't super newsy. In fact, this is along the lines, I'd say, of when you have the ironic breaking. And it's about women facing hurdles in chemistry for startups. This actually relates well back to Jeannie Garbarino's opinion piece this week, which is why I chose it. And it basically says that a lot of women, when, say, laid off of their jobs, as many chemists have been in the recession, when they go to do something different, they decide to become entrepreneurs. It's actually fairly common among people who have lost their jobs. And they have a hard time finding funding, which is true of many people in startups. But in addition, they find that they face a subtle gender bias. For instance, one woman in this article discusses at a scientific conference that when people approached the booth, they would talk to her male partner and assume he was the CEO of her company. That wraps up our week at XX Science.
Next week, look for more interesting science posts from our XX Science contributors and editors.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave a review or a 5-star rating at iTunes to help bring science to more people. Our music is provided by Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. Our artwork is by Dallas Lopez. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at XXSci. This has been chemistry editor Adrian Rorick and tech editor Jeff Perkel. We are XX Science, bringing science to the woman in you.